Welcome, my friends, to the podcast that never ends, where we gather our clan and talk about peace and love in our lives, the difficulties along the journey, and how we rise up. We will experience a little thing I call Kluberty together, find our sweet spot, and planting our seeds to watch them grow in our magic garden. I'm Uncle Dave, and our transformation starts right here. Hey now, and how are you doing? Want to welcome you to another episode of Peace, Love, and Bring a Bat. Today's guest is with somebody who's really special, Consuelo Nishimwe. I probably ruined the last name, and I apologize for that. But Consuelo and I had met about 6 years ago at the launch of a book of our mutual friend, and she sat next to me, and I heard her story, which is incredible, and I can't wait to share that, as she's been sharing it since the 1994 when she had gone through the genocide in Rwanda. So we're going to hear about her story, her resilience, and also the book Tested to the Limit, and which is the genocide survivor story of pain, resilience, and hope. So Consuelo, I welcome you so much. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me. It's really a pleasure joining you here. Thank you. Yeah. And it's also amazing to reconnect again. Thank you.
Yeah, the reconnection is great. And what helped me now dive deep into it. I know when we met, I was like, I just wanted to use your story to share with my girls, the girls that, you know, I'm raising, teenage girls now, but it was so inspiring, right? Just how women should always find role models, and I think you're an amazing role model.
Thank you so much. Really amazing.
Helping find your
thank
voice.
You.
So, I don't know how many people even remember, but it's almost 30 years since those horrible 100 days. Would you at least just start off sharing what the Rwanda, not only your experience, but what the Rwanda genocide was, because we might have heard about it and not knowing the impact that genocide across the world that is still undergoing experiences.
Yeah. Thank you so much again for having me. It really means a lot to hear your kind words, really. And for the listeners here who don't know what happened in 1994, so it's almost going to be 27 years now. It's 27 years, almost 30, like you said, 27 years when the genocide happened in 1994. And my journey, I shared in my book, like you mentioned earlier, when the genocide, of course, for those who don't know, Rwanda is in East Africa. It's a small country, like the size of Maryland. So, and for people who don't know, Rwanda also, we have a history of colonization, and and for those who don't know very well, briefly the history, before the Belgians came in the country, it was the Germans and Belgian after, the country was first a monarchy. So, and we had what they for social classes. Tutsis and Hutus and Twa were mainly social classes until the colonization, when everything changed into ethnic groups. So, and those who were social classes became ethnic groups because of colonization. So, and the way it worked is because those who came in the country, the Belgians, made sure that the people, those who were in the country, feel like they are different. So we are all Black, we look alike, but they managed to make sure that we think we are different. So that's how it worked. So, and they issued identity cards. So every person was placed into whatever ethnic group was placed into. So you had to carry that ID card. So I found that my family, of course, my great-grandparents were given the ID of Tutsis. So, And that's how I found myself in the family of Tutsis ethnic group. So, and at that time, when they left the country already, the Hutus were the majority. And already the tension started, and that's how the genocide even began in those early times, 1959. So those who were in the power at that time, the Hutu majority, started killing Tutsis. So, and at that time in 1959, it was not a big genocide. It was a small scale of genocide. So many Tutsis left the country and they lived abroad. And those who remain in the country, of course, they were persecuted until I was born, because I heard even before 1959, 1960, some of my family members faced persecution at that time. And until 1994, when I was 14 years old, I had to face my own reality of a genocide. So, and that's because the magnitude of inciting the hatred and division among those two groups, so grew to a point where those who were in the power at that time, the Hutu, managed to, to tell, to make sure that those Tutsis who lived in the country lived, feeling like they're not deserving to live in their own country. So, and every time you hear in many parts of the country, even before 1994, Tutsis were always being killed in many parts of the country. So, and when I was growing up, my parents, actually, I was very fortunate to have a good parents who were teachers. So, and I was the oldest in my family. In 1994, I was 14 years old, and I had other siblings who came after me, my sister, my three younger brothers. So despite the fact that we had those kind of, persecution and tension in the country, my parents managed to give me love and affection in our household. We had a beautiful family. And for those who don't know very well Rwanda, it's, despite the fact to all those things were happening, but somehow, people managed to love each other, neighbors, and, seeing each other, visiting each other. Since my parents were teachers, they used to teach, a lot of kids in the community. And that meant that they had so many people around them. So, and for me, I grew up in that environment where I felt like, despite the fact all those things were happening, but I felt loved and cared for in my family. So unfortunately, I didn't know that everything was going to change. So I didn't know we were going to have the genocide we had in 1994. So until the genocide in 1994 was well planned, so because already those who were in the power, they were already telling their neighbors Tutsis to kill their own neighbors Tutsis, their own I'm sorry, the Hutus to kill their own neighbors Tutsis. So that meant that the people who did what they did were our neighbors. They were not strangers. So, and unfortunately, the genocide was well planned, and there were machetes already imported in the country. And there was a radio also already placed to incite the hatred against the Tutsi. And they were calling, and already they used the names to dehumanize us as cockroaches and snakes. So as a kid, as a teenager, I never thought very much. It was hard for me to hear those things because my parents told me to love. They didn't tell me anything about ethnicity or, but for me, I couldn't believe what I was hearing. But unfortunately, already the genocide was well planned until I found myself and my family and many others in the country going into hiding for 3 months. And like what I said in my memoir, many horrible things happened. So, and losing my family, losing my dad and my three younger brothers. And many horrible things happened to me as a young woman, as a girl. faced unimaginable horrors. And that's why I also speak, because I'm not the only person. I speak on behalf of so many young girls like myself and women who were targeted and raped and live now with the consequences. So unfortunately, I live with HIV as a result of what I suffered during the genocide against the Tutsi.
Yeah, that was the incredible part. There was many incredible parts of your book and your story, that on the radio, they were coming. They weren't just saying these are bad people. They were calling you cockroaches and things like that. Those are the amazing things that, you know, is just incredible that the government was supporting it. I guess at the end of the day, genocide, as you said, it was a historical pattern. These genocides don't start just at the spur of a hat. They, you know, it's built up over time.
Yeah. It didn't come overnight. It was just a build up for many years. And that shows you like how, you know, words have power, you know, like over the years, you know, it was just built by words. And then it turned out to be a genocide. We saw like more than a million of people, Tutsis, were murdered.
Yeah, that was,
and imagine within 3 months. So it's a horrible thing, and it's very hard. But for me, I feel like you know, it's important. That's why I also speak. I just want to make sure that we learn how to care and love one another. So that's for me what I learned from the genocide is to love. You know, one of the main thing I learned, you know, even though I've been what I've been through, I feel like love conquers all.
I had read a quote, or I heard you speak and saying that, you know, if once you keep love in your heart, you know, and bring love in your heart, it nourishes your soul. After going through the things that you've gone through, I could not imagine that you still come out with a smile on your face and still loving and looking to help out others out. I mean,
well, thank you. Yeah, for those who are going to read the book, my mom is one of those people that I learned from, you know, how to live positively and love life despite the fact of all we've been through. She's someone really I learned from, and many other people I've met in my life, and I'm glad I have her. Because I had to learn how to love despite the fact, because that's what she taught me. She said, we can't live a life with, you know, living like the way we were treated. So we need to learn how to love. And for me, I am grateful because I have her. I learned that from her. Thank you.
Yeah, those are powerful messages. I mean, I know that at the beginning of the genocide, you had separated from your dad. You were taken. Your mom took you and your sister, at that time, your younger brothers away for safety, and your dad had stayed behind. You separated because they felt that it was going to be safer that way for them. And for the next 3 months, you would be traveling across Rwanda and for safety, finding new places. And because your mom was a teacher, she was able to help find some places, but not every place wanted to take you in, your little moving tribe.
It was hard during the genocide to find a place to hide, because you never know who was kind and who was not kind. But for me, I am really, that's why I'm always grateful for anybody who allowed themselves to pull me in their home and my mom and to hide us in their home. I'm really grateful for those people. And as you were mentioning, for us to hide in different places, like my dad was thinking going to another place will be easier for us to, you know, to make sure at least whoever is going to survive will be, you know, because sometimes it was dangerous to be in one place. So that's why sometimes we tried it to be, you know, separated. But many times like you saw in the book, it was hard for my mom to leave us as kids. So it was, she tried it to make sure we, you know, whatever she could find some places and knock the door of somebody. You saw that there were people we knew very well who were good friends and refused to help. And you saw even some people who helped that to help. But they were kind and they helped us. So I really realized that, you know, there are people who didn't, not everybody killed during the genocide, for the people who to know. So even though it happened like that way, there were people who were kind. So there are other stories you could hear from survivors who were hidden by amazing people, and they kept them in their homes or found places to hide them, even though it was dangerous for them to do that. But I think for me, I am really, I learned that when you allow yourself to hate somebody for no reason, definitely can take you to a wrong place. But when you allow to love someone, you get reward from that. So, and I saw both. I saw love and hate at the same time hiding through the genocide. So,
well, that,
yeah.
Again, I can't imagine what you've gone through, and I hate to keep repeating that, but but that you could still come out finding that resilience and that love, and that, you know, again, we didn't know each other when we met, and the pure joy of how you were telling me your story stuck with me through all these years, till we reconnected now.
Oh, thank you.
So I think it's beautiful that you can put your love filter on. I talk about that with some people, that if you can see things through the love filter, or being able to push the love through your filter, life changes. So,
yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think all of us, no matter what you go through in life, I think it's important to allow ourselves to love, even love heals. To me, I think allowing yourself within your heart and, you know, to feel love, I think it's important. It's not only helping you to live a good life, it helps also to you to help others feel better around you. So, and for me, that's what I've realized throughout my life after even, you know, during these 27 years. In my life journey of healing has been to allow myself to even care for the people I don't know, even the people that I met, you know, because even strangers here in the United States have been so kind to me. I realize how kindness really can not only helps you in your healing journey, it makes your life feel worth living. So, and I think to me, of us to live that kind of lifestyle, not only benefits for you, it benefits for all of us. And I think all of us, if we, whatever we are, if we plant a seed of love, I think the world would be a better place to live. So
I love that. You know, you plant the seeds, and if you nurture it the right way and with love, it will always grow the right way. Yeah.
Absolutely. And then our kids growing are going to, because they learn from us. So for me, I didn't want my nieces and nephews to learn that I'm one, you know, of those people who, you know, did horrible things to me. I live the same way as those people, you know, wanted me to be. So I wanted to show them something different. Despite the fact that I live with the consequences and the pain, I'm still healing. But I need to be able to also, you know, learn how to live a life where I can make somebody happy. Yeah, so, and at least whoever comes to me feels happy. So that's the only thing I want. At least my short life here on earth is lived well. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Not materially, but the way I live with people. So,
so one of the things, so obviously,
yeah.
the
thank you.
the podcast is about peace and love, and I know you listen to and follow a lot of inspirational thought leaders.
Right.
Who are some of your favorites?
You know, I like there's one of the people. She's no longer alive now. Her name is Inyumba Loizia. Is one of the minister of women we had in Rwanda. So she's no longer alive. She's one of my inspiration, and she was somebody who came in Rwanda after the genocide. And when I was growing up, she inspired me to, you know, as a young woman to love life, because she was a refugee. She grew up as a refugee, and the way she fought to make sure the country is better coming back in Rwanda, and loving every person, because in Rwanda, we no longer have, you know, these ID cards of Hutus and Tutsis anymore. So we are trying to, you know, to live as one, as Rwandans. So because we want people, all young people, to learn from us. So, and I remember she was one of those people that I felt like I want to be like her. So that's one from Rwanda. And Maya Angelou. I really love Maya Angelou. Yep. Maya Angelou, learning her story as an American, you know, person, and the way she, you know, her life was and what she's done in her life, and trials and tribulations, but she was able to inspire people all over. It didn't matter who they were, all over the world. So really, that's an inspiration to me. So I really read her books. I really followed everything she did. So she inspires me. So, and there are many great people around the world, actually, I really admire. So, and of course, Dr. Martin Luther King, and many others. So,
Maya Angelou. Angelou is one of my favorites as well, and she's great.
Yeah.
I think we always need to get inspiration from others, and you know, it's
and we learn from each other. We learn from each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, some of it comes from within ourselves, but when you hear it from other people and you get fed, I mean, that's one of the reasons why I'm doing the podcast, is to have inspirational stories. And to hear that maybe I've gone through something similar, and how you've risen and resilience. Now, you talk about Rwanda. I have not yet gone to Rwanda. Have you been back since you've left?
No, I've never been back, but I'm planning to go soon. So, and if you are willing, definitely I would love for you to visit the country. And the country is amazing. So there are so many. Of course, we're still healing. We are a country that is still healing. Healing takes it's a journey. Healing is a journey. So, but at the same time, I'm grateful for where we are as a country. So, yeah, we are a model for so many people all over the world, I think. Yeah.
I would love to go. I have communicated the way the world has gotten smaller through social media. And one of my future podcasts we've already recorded is with my friend Ivan Wanje in Uganda. And he helps educate children. And so I'd love to – I've always said to him, I can't wait to get to see him in person. We've met a few times, and I've met the children he teaches in his village. So I would love to have the opportunity because I
– Oh, wonderful.
To go to Rwanda as well, because I know how – beautiful of a country it is, and the healing. Look, as an older country in the United States, we're still healing also from many things as we work through our own process.
Of course, you know, it takes a while to heal, but as long as you don't stop, so it's important, and make sure that you keep doing that. So we'll keep doing this, you know, for a generation, of course, but at the same time. I'm glad as a country that been through the genocide, and you see young people living well, and the country is safe, and everybody is just doing whatever they want to do. So it's really amazing, and to see people all over the world visiting. So it makes me happy. I'm glad I had to leave to see this happening. So I'm grateful.
Yeah, sometimes yeah. We have to go through the biggest pains to come out the other side. And you've, I mean, again, one of the words you use is resilience in your book, you know, in the title of your book. So resilience is very important for all of us. What type of things do you do to help you become more resilient?
Oh, thank you for that question. So, you know, as a person, of course, it took me, you know, many years. It was things I do. I try to listen to other people's stories. I try to be part of, to listen, because I realized that the best gift you can give to anybody who came to you with a heavy heart is listening. And for me, I feel like because somebody listened to me, I feel like it's important for me to listen to others. So, and it helps me feel that at least I'm doing a little bit of something to help that person feel like they matter. So, and I don't know if I am answering well your question, but I feel like that's the smallest thing I feel like that helps me in my life, when at least I feel like there's somebody who comes to me and then I'm there and present for that person. So, and then at the same time, of course, I you know, I'm doing my best also to, you know, to tell my story, you know, even though it's not easy to say, you know, to tell what happened, but I feel like, I'm trying also to make sure that those who've been through the same thing I've been through are going to tell their story, so whatever they can. So, and I'm showing them that when you tell your story, you open the door to healing. So, and it's not like necessary to do it in the, you know, in the public, like the way I did, or writing a story, but I'm trying to be part of, you know, in any way that person wants to share and be able to start that healing journey. So, yeah, so I'm trying, you know, all those things to make sure that at least, you know, I'm doing something to, you know, to help someone else too.
Yeah, well, that's what you're doing. You're like a beacon of love and light, you know, shining, having it shine not only to you, but through you, by telling those stories and telling people it's okay to tell their story and find their voice, right? Making sure that they find their voice. So I really appreciate it. I mean, you're amazing. I mean, you've gone to the UN and told your story, and to make sure that stories are heard around the world about women's oppression and other genocides. So it's not only that you're saying, I'm only concerned about Rwanda. You're concerned about all genocides. And that's amazing that you do that. I know Safe Magazine said that you were one of the most 50 influential global heroes who stopped sexual violence in children. And, you know, that's pretty powerful for anybody to be doing that. And, you know, getting your message out there and standing out there alone at times.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for saying that. It's very humbling that somebody think I'm, you know, recognize what I'm doing. So I just feel like when I was going through what I went through, I wish I had somebody, you know, doing something to speak out. That's why I'm speaking out when I see something happening to someone else. So I know how horrible, you know, it is. So I don't want anybody to go through what I've been through. And unfortunately, as we speak now, there are genocides happening in other places. So, and we know that when a genocide happened, some, you know, it's similar. So in many cases, the genocides are similar, whatever they are happening anywhere. So, and for me, I know the issue of girls, it's really hard in conflicts. So, and that's why I'm speaking out. So I speak out. So I feel like, you know, for the people, especially the UN and other in the international community, at least to do something and make sure. So I realize as a survivor, using my voice is another way of, you know, making sure the international community, you know, intervenes and be able to, you know, to help, you know, stop such atrocities from, you know, occurring again. So it's painful for me. It's personal. It's painful. And I will do whatever I can in my own small way I can. So hopefully we'll see a world without a genocide or war or anything, you know, bad going to you know, going happening to anybody. So hopefully, like your girls, I want your girls to live in a world where they feel cared for and loved. So I'm sure they will love to see other, you know, girls anywhere in the world to live the same way as well. So, and that's what I wish for, you know, for that to happen. So
yeah, that's beautiful. I again, another quote that I know you've said, it's never too dark to have hope. Never lose hope. When you lose hope, you lose your own self, the defenses, and you lose a piece of yourself when you lose hope.
Yeah. No, thank you for that. I always love to, you know, to uplift anybody to feel like no matter what horrible circumstances you may face in your life, never lose hope. For losing hope is the beginning of your own self-defeat. So, and that's my mantra. So hopefully it can be a mantra for somebody else. So it helps me. So hopefully it can help somebody else.
It's yeah. Beautiful. So how were you able to go forward? I mean, going through those horrible 3 months, losing much of your family, how were you able to? I mean, I know through the support of your mom and your sister, but also you found the safety of friends and things like that. But how have you gone forward since then? You were 14 and you're older than 14 now.
I'm still 14. I'm joking. So yeah.
So am I.
Yeah. You know, as you can, you know, as you can imagine, I don't know how old your girls are. So, they are 14. Any of your girls is 14 or
they're 16 and 18.
Yes, it's kind of similar, to close to that age, you know. Yeah, you are just you know, happy when you are lucky to have a parents around you. It's like a time where you are dreaming, you know, like to be happy. Your mind is still growing and all that. So, but when you go through a tragedy like extreme trauma, like a genocide, it's harder that's why I always, that's why I'm, you know, I emphasize much on young people, because I know how hard it can be to recover, even heal, because you are young and such traumatic experience happened to you. It's hard for some people to even recover. I'm really grateful that I, at least I can, you know, I'm happy and I live my life the way I live. It took me a while. It took me a while. And for me, it was a journey that I feel like the reason why I am where I am and, you know, I'm in a stage where at least I can do what I do and I'm happy is because I never gave up. And I never gave up. That's what I want for anybody to take from my own experience. Never give up. Never give up. Just keep hold on to hope. Just hold on to hope. And I know it's hard. I know you feel what you feel within yourself. But when you allow yourself to feel like there's, you know, no matter what you've been through, there's a way you can be happy. I think the more you allow your mind to think that, you know, you can be happy, absolutely, you get there. So for me, I feel like all these years, you know, allowing myself to work on myself, to know that I need something good coming into my mind, despite the fact that I've seen the worst and I've had images of bad things, I managed to, you know, to cleanse and do a deep cleansing. I would say it's a deep cleansing of my inner world. So now that's why I'm jokingly like I'm 14. I feel like I'm living the life I've never lived. My teenage life is back again. So even though I'm 41, I feel like now I'm living the life of maybe those years of I was in a lot of pain and trauma. So I feel like I'm you know, living those lives too. So at the same time, living my 41. So
I hear you. I understand it well. You know, when things go well, I've gone through things in my life that past year, I've reevaluated those things. And once you can clear those out, it becomes a brand new you. You know, I go back to at times feeling like 14 as well. You know, I always used to say I was 14, but I was. But in a bad way. And now I've been able to heal myself. I'm 14 in a good way. And it feels different. I feel like a different person. You know, the laughter comes out much easier.
Absolutely. And it kind of like, because you've had those times when you were not happy, you were like traumatic. But then when you come back again to the same age within you, and see the joy, I think it's beautiful.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay, so, the happy 14, not the sad 14.
Yep. All right, so we're gonna wrap up. Is there anything that you want to leave? One more. I mean, you've given lots of great messages, lots of great seeds that we just will continue to grow. Mm-hmm. Is there any one message besides hope that you'd like to share with us before we leave?
You know, the message I would love to leave for anybody, even, I don't know, majority of people, I'm sure you get young people. There's one thing I always think about. When you have faith, you have strength. So, you know, just keep, you know, have faith in you, and know that no matter what you see around you, always always have a mind to see, you know, to seek love and peace. And when you begin around you, wherever you are, it will always grow also, you know, to another, it will expand. So, and I think all of us, wherever we are, just to make sure we plant a seed of love and see peace around us, absolutely, if you all do the same thing, absolutely, it will and begin seeing that within yourself, and then you will see what happens. Yeah.
Okay. Well,
and you will see the best results. Yeah. Thank you. And something else just came through my mind. Peace begins within.
Results, and it will. And absolutely, when you bring peace and love, don't forget to bring the bad. But that means, you know, finding your non-negotiables, where you want to take a stand, get your sweet spot, and take that swing. I thank you for your time, Consuelo. Mm-hmm. I so appreciate it. And we'll have to keep figuring
thank
out
so
how to
much.
Get your message out there so that way we can share it with everybody. And you have a great day. Well, my friends, today's journey has come to a close. I hope the seeds of peace and love continue to grow for each one of you. Remember, the peace and love surround you that will assist you to rise again. And don't forget to bring a bat for what you believe in. Namaste.